Hi everyone, and welcome to another special episode of the EK podcast. In today's episode, it will be me, Malin,
me, Nora,
and me, Elin,
interviewing the Nobel Prize winner in chemistry from 2009, Professor Ada Jonath.
She was awarded the Nobel Prize for finding the ribosomal structure and function, a big milestone for the knowledge of how DNA code is translated to life.
In this interview, Jonath shares experiences from her life and research, how she managed to work multiple part-time jobs during her years in high school and university to provide for her family. She describes how she created her own path to success despite getting a lot of criticism, and not giving up on her research even though she faced many setbacks, using her biggest motivating factors, curiosity and passion. So sit back and listen to an incredible story. It is time to welcome Nobel laureate Ada Jonath. Okay, so welcome to Professor Ada Jonath, winner of the Nobel Prize in Chemistry year 2009. It is an honor to have you with us today, and thank you so much for taking the time for this interview. So if we start from the beginning, what got you interested in the world of science?
So actually, when I was young, school kid, I wanted to be a writer. Mm-hmm. I wanted to write stories, thinking, philosophy. I had lots of things inside myself. But when I put them on paper, and at that time it was really paper, not computers, it was not as impressive as it was within me. Mm-hmm. And I tried a lot, but when I was 17, I wrote something at school to a teacher, a philosophy teacher, but she asked us to write something. Only two and a half pages. And she was so excited. She was very high. She had very high demand. And she told, something like this is once in lifetime. She was right. I never could write two pages. At the same time, I was also very curious. Since I was very, very young, I made experiments when I was five, even less. And when I was seven, I already had vapor diffusion and transfer and so on. So I went after my curiosity. Mm. How was my life when I was a student? My father died when I was 11. We were poor anyway. Mm. And when he died, my mother was a very good mother. She spoke four languages, but she knew nothing else. She knew to knit, to make fantastic things. But I had to help her in supporting the family. And this was not so simple. I had a very young sister, and she was almost a baby, 2.5 years old. So I had to help with this too. I had about 50,000 jobs since I was 11. Yeah. And everything else, all my studies, for instance, I was in this very, very good school, very expensive, but on a fellowship, mm-hmm. on a grant. And actually, the school even paid me. They gave me duties, like I was in charge of the reading room, then in charge of the library. I was in charge of teaching mathematics to newcomers.
Wow.
So they were in my class, there were three newcomers from Bulgaria. And they got enough education in language, but mathematics was above them. I was taking care of their mathematics for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I got payment. I did something for the community. Three things.
Yeah.
And I got also fellowship. So this were my life in high school, and became even more demanding when I was a student. All my life was, of course, to understand. I was only tuned down to understand, but also to finish the lab work as fast as possible and run to do other things.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, how did you manage to have time to do all these things, both jobs?
I don't know. When money is under pressure, there is time. The time jumps in. Of course, if somebody decides not, or breaks down, or all of a sudden it's not interesting, then time becomes a factor. But when somebody is really interested or really excited, time is only a side consideration. It sneaks in somehow. Or maybe only for me, but this, so I can give you an example. First of all, I have to tell you, I didn't go to study because I thought that there is a profession called scientist. I didn't know that there is such a profession. I was playing my curiosity, and I thought it's a hobby. And I thought nobody pays for a hobby of somebody else. So I thought that science is a hobby. I knew that the university teaches science, but I thought that this was for specific professions like lab assistant or teacher or something like this. I didn't think that if I do research, anybody will be supporting this. And I could support myself, but not so much. Mm. How did I discover? First of all, why did I choose chemistry? For me, chemistry and physics were of the same level of interest. Mm-hmm. But to chemistry, there was the number of people that were admitted at that time to chemistry were about 50 a year. And there was only one university at that time in Israel, small country. You are also a small country, but you are very developed. But you have hundreds of schools and universities. We had at that time, for chemistry one, there was another one for engineering.
Only one in the whole of Israel?
At that time, yeah. Now there are five and several colleges. Mm-hmm. So they give a certificate of a bachelor or some of the masters, but not PhDs. And it's counted except for the one that is dealing with politics and money, that is very, very good. Except for this one, they are not counted as high, but they are okay. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I at that time was one, and to mathematics and to physics, everybody that signed in could be accepted. Everybody enrolled above some, had to have some level in matriculations.
Okay.
It's the end of the school. They had to have 9.5 out of 10 were accepted. In chemistry, this was only one factor. The most important factor was how many benches they had in the lab. They had only 50 benches. So you had to be top 50, not...
The space was limiting.
And chemistry was so popular at that time. Now we are running to look for somebody to study chemistry. 850 a year before me were competing for these 50 seats. And everybody that signed in could write priority one and priority second. So I thought if I write first priority physics, I will be accepted because I had the level that they looked for, the grade. And they will not even look for the second priority. But if I write chemistry priority and I am kicked out, I go second priority physics and it will be okay. Physics, what happened, physics and mathematics in first year was the same. They started with about 200 number of seats in the lecture room. And they finished with about 20. So the selection was during the first year, not before, but during. But anyway, I signed for chemistry. I was accepted, and this is the way I did chemistry.
Ah, wonderful!
I even took physical chemistry as my major.
Yeah,
but as I told you, I thought it's a hobby, and I thought that if I got a big fellowship, if I get fellowship, and I can work in the afternoon, in the evenings, and on the weekends. Mm-hmm. I was a teacher on the weekend that taught mathematics in high school. I'll do this. I'll make it. So second year already. I passed the first year. Second year, the teacher said in the class, one of the lecturers said, and this is an open question still, and the way to look into it is either going this way or that way. But something in chemistry. But I had another idea. When he said it, I already had something running in my head. So after the lecture, I went to him and I said, now how about looking at it this way, my way? Mm-hmm. Oh, he said, it's so good. It's such a good idea. Come to my lab and talk to the people, to the students. This is the way I discovered that people can do research.
Wow.
As a profession.
How old were you at that time?
Above 20, 21, I think. Only in retrospect, I think about it. People ask me, why did you choose? I didn't choose. I really didn't do any choice. I took the
opportunity.
it all went like this. Like when I was a bachelor, I, as I told you, I took physical chemistry, then I took biophysics. And in biophysics for a master thesis, there was only one seat. So I got it. I wrote it. I got it. Same for biophysics. Sorry, for biochemistry, there were 12 out of the 50 chemists and the 70 biologists. I got the one of the 12. Then I got the one of biophysics. My life went like this. I really didn't have time. I had so many jobs and so many duties. I didn't have time to think about as I would think it now.
What kept you motivated during all that time?
Curiosity.
Yeah, curiosity.
There were five things that kept me motivated. Curiosity, more curiosity, even more curiosity, a lot of curiosity and passion.
Yeah.
That's maybe all that research is about in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. I think also at the end. Mm-hmm. I didn't reach the end yet, but getting closer to it all the time. Curiosity is the, at least for me, is the driving force. Mm-hmm.
So you were very determined during your student years. But if you look back on all your work and achievements, how has your journey been? From how has it developed from being a student to the further research? And when did you know that
curiosity
still
and passion? Mm-hmm. And I was also most of the time I didn't even know about all what didn't work. I knew that what I want to do here or there it didn't work here. Only later on I found out how not traditional I was going. But there was also a large component of luck. Mm-hmm. For instance, one luck, the biggest luck I had was a brain concussion as a bicycle accident. So, really? You see, even something like this can turn into luck if it comes on time. But what motivated me was my curiosity. Now I'm famous and so on, but in the beginning I did things my way. I also took on me duties or even installations, ways that were known to be difficult and impossible and not very common and not highly appreciated at that time. But all I didn't figure about how people look at me, except that when I was fired. This was another minute that was lucky for me. And I was fired. I'll tell you in a minute why I was fired, but I thought it was correct. I was rehired immediately the same day, but on a very low level that was called not exactly faculty. There was a word for it. I can't translate it now. But somebody that can do research, can ask for grant, can have students, but cannot be promoted. This is it. Cannot go into the PI. Somebody that can do it. This was my best time. Because nobody looked at me. I knew that my way is here and from now on I can do what I want because it doesn't matter, nobody will consider me. That's the way I went into ribosomes. Mm. That's the way I went into this project. Because I could do what I wanted on a low level status compared to my friends or colleagues or whatever you want, my peers. So they were laughing at me. So what? And I don't know if you say it in Swedish, but in Hebrew we say the laugh is the last one.
Yes. Yeah.
As a PhD student, I determined the structure of collagen. I think you all heard the name now.
Yes.
But when I worked, it was not known. Now collagen is to become pretty, used in surgery, and you eat it to be healthy, all types of things. Most of them are, except for surgery, most of them are more a hope than real. But when I did it, there was hardly anybody. Against my supervisor, I wrote a program, general program for fibers. Collagen is a triple helical fiber. I don't want to go into detail, but it came out with fantastic results, a fantastic description of collagenase. We could do several models, six models for my PhD, a Nature paper, a JMB 16 pages paper, and then and people laughed at me, said, ah, is it not important, just the fiber, doesn't do anything. Now collagen is highly regarded, but not at that time. Yeah. Anyway, afterwards, I went to postdoc 1 year on muscle, and they got a machine. So they had the first rotating anode in America, and it needed high vacuum, and nobody could get this vacuum. Mm-hmm. So the whole year, I did one experiment. Most of the time, I worked the vacuum. This was first year, and second year, I worked on protein structure at MIT in a very highly competitive group. So I was sort of an outlier. But it didn't matter. I understood what it means. And from the beginning, when I was still a student, why did I do collagen structure? Because I thought to understand properties or functionality, one needs a structure. Yeah. And at that time, structure was only by crystallography. So you have a question, why did I choose crystallography?
Yeah.
I didn't choose crystallography. I wanted to understand how processes are going. For this, I knew that I need the structure, and crystallography was the way to do it. Mm. If you ask me, I can throw crystallography. Although I became a very important person in this field, and I'm responsible for 105,000 structures.
So crystallography was the tool you used to figure out the structure. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was my tool. It's a complicated tool. It's a tool that becomes science on its own. But I didn't look at it this way. Mm-hmm. Although I used it, and although all the time I improved it and made unexpected directions of it, I didn't choose crystallography. As I told you, I didn't choose chemistry. I chose the way that I will understand nature. If it's chemistry, okay. Crystallography, okay. I understood what I understood very beginning in my life. At that time, there was only DNA structure and hemoglobin.
Yeah.
Only the hemoglobin, myoglobin, and Phillips was working on lysozyme. This was it in structures. Yet, I understood that this is the important, this is the way to understand function.
Yeah.
And I wanted to understand function. I was ready to look at the stones and understand why they became this way or that way, still crystallographic. Mm.
Well, when did you realize that knowing the structure would have such an impact in future science?
When I saw how the heme in hemoglobin is attaching the oxygen or the carbon dioxide, I was like that. Discovery. Creation.
Yeah.
When I understood DNA, the base pairing, and how they are kept, and what is the code in them, and that they have to be opened and copied.
And when did you realize that your work would potentially earn you a Nobel Prize?
Oh, that's a very bad, good question, bad answer. When I started, it was known that many very, very established scientists with good labs and a lot of money, I tried to understand how ribosome works. This is what I did, ribosome that reads the genetic code and produces the proteins accordingly. So it was known. It was known that ribosomes are reading the genetic code from messenger RNA. It was known that they are assembling the amino acids that are brought to them by tRNA. It is known that it provides the stereochemistry for making the bonds between the amino acids. It was known that the proteins come out of them correctly. Mm. All this was known. And it was known that ribosomes are made of two subunits with many components. Mm. But it was not known how it happens. And this is what I wanted to study. Mm. How it happens. Because I was really fascinated by protein biosynthesis. And people try to, as I said, crystallography was the only way. Crystallography implies crystals, you need crystals, which is three-dimensional periodic arrangements of the components. They couldn't get crystals. And very, very talented people with established people with established group, I already said it, tried to crystallize and failed. For instance, you heard about Watson and Crick from the DNA. They had Caltech arrange for them a whole, what they call Institute for Ribosome Research, For 10 years, they didn't get crystals. And Rich, he was a very talented scientist. And Watson, you heard about it. So why did I go into it? I went into it because when I tried to make, they explained that they could not crystallize because ribosomes, by definition, will not crystallize. Mm-hmm. So when I started, ribosomes were considered non-crystallizable. Why? Because they are large. Mm-hmm. This was the largest at that time, actually, maybe the, until now. They are having many components, many components there. They actually were much too large for the machines at that time, unless you made some clever sideways. mainly large, many components, and they had dynamic structure because they had to do many things. So when I went into this mission, after my brain concussion, people told me that they thought that I went in because my brain was still. I had a very, very serious one. Very, very serious. Two operations, 11 months.
Oh.
Until only bicycle. Oof. Sweden is full of bicycle. And all what I wanted is to go swimming in the beach. I fell off. I didn't understand that it happened. Somebody connected me from the street, brought me to the hospital. And I at that time, they tried to take a x-ray of my head, the doctors. Mm-hmm. So they pushed my head on the table. And I thought, why these people in the beach are pushing me? And also, why are they all with white coats? They should be with bathing suits. So then this is the minute I realized, and I told them, what are you doing? It's hurting. So they said, we want to take a picture of you. In Hebrew, you say picture, x-ray picture.
Yeah.
So I said, no, I'm not photogenic. No, there is not much sun. So they said, no, not with sun, with x-rays.
Yeah.
I said, no, x-rays. This is my profession.
Yeah.
The machine you have. So they rolled me to the machine, to the x-ray machine, and I told them, that's not a good one. It's a medical one. You won't get any structure out of it. So they said, medical, yeah, this is a medical one. Now lie down. Then I understood. Now I am laughing, but at that time, just to tell you the severity of it. Anyway, when I started, was after I tried to prepare ribosomes myself, not for doing, I thought it's too complicated, and they will not crystallize. I only want to study some of their function, like how they, at that time I wanted to know how they initiate.
Mm-hmm.
There are two subunits, how they come together, what initiate them, and I knew that even in bacteria, there are three initiation factors.
Yeah.
So I focused on the initiation factor. In human, there are 20 initiation factors. Bacteria was difficult enough. So I planned an experiment on initiation factors. I already had small crystals, but in Berlin, I wanted to make this experiment in Berlin because they had the possibility to get large amounts of factors. But I didn't come to my own experiment because of. So they were waiting for me, waiting. I signed the contract with them that I will be 8 weeks there. This is what we thought is enough to make enough initiation factors. But I wrote to them that I have a brain concussion, so I cannot come to the experiment. So they delayed it and delayed it and delayed it. 11 months passed, almost 10 months. And I didn't contact them because I was still not able to fly. So they decided that I'm dead. Because who recovers so long from a brain concussion? So they didn't try to me to verify, because who writes to dead people? And at that time, it was with an envelope, with a stamp, it took time. So when I wrote to them, now I recovered, I'm coming next week. It was already the last 10 days of this experiment. And the student that came with me, she went back after 10 days. But I stayed my 8 weeks, and it was end of November. It means I went into Christmas and New Year, but I stayed in the library many hours. I don't read German, so I read only the English things they had there. Yeah. They had a document of travel company that sent a delegation to the North Pole, close to you, to see how the bears during the winter, when the bears are sleeping, what is their metabolism. So they found all types of things. This part of metabolism is decreased, this is increased, whatever. But they also found in cells of dead bears, that the ribosomes are organized in a semi-organized way on the inner side of their membranes, the inner. of the cells. So, and they found it in every cell they looked at by microscope. The pictures that they put in their report were really awful, but I could see order. So I said, ribosomes can be ordered. People couldn't make it, but every bear, every winter, every cell, it can be done. And I thought this is a mechanism by nature provides. Mm-hmm. And I thought, why should it be? And in my opinion, it was because ribosomes are not very stable. This is what I will tell you in a minute. And this is the way that nature preserves the ribosomes from falling apart by dense sucking. So when the bears get up, they can do what they have to do. They can make their proteins that they need. Mm-hmm. When they get up, they cannot until then start to make ribosomes. So this was my driving idea.
Yeah.
What I didn't tell you yet is when I tried to make ribosomes myself, bacterial ribosomes, following procedures that were published by the best scientists. I didn't have my own procedure for this. They were already published, all those that knew all about ribosomes. And in Berlin, there was a Max Planck Institute all about ribosomes, except for structure. 245 people. Yeah. This is why they could accommodate me. I was even less than 5%. And they let me make ribosomes. I said, I want to use your facilities for ribosomes. I had time because my own experiment was finished. So when I made ribosomes, I found that I get only between third to half of the expected activity. So I thought, I don't know to work. I blamed myself. And I contacted all those that wrote the procedures. And I told them, look, I think that I'm following what you've written and I get only less than half of the activity. And they said, yeah, usually we get even less than 30%. This is usual. And they didn't care. They took the fraction that was active, which is correct. But how can one crystallize something that is partially active and partially not? It means, what does it mean it's not active? It fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I thought that the big, real big reason for non-crystallization is this is they fall apart. Not that they are large, not that they are complicated, but they fall apart. And while you prepare them, they fall apart.
Yeah.
So then I thought, why does nature provide this mechanism of close packing? I thought that this is preparation for stress. The winter is stress for them. But stress doesn't have to be cold temperature. It can be also hot temperature, as long as it's stress. In Israel, there is a lake that is called the Dead Sea. It's the lowest point in the world. There is no life in it, no flowers, no nothing, only the people that come there, at least what is seen. It's very hot in the summer. It can reach 50, 55 degrees Celsius. Wow. And it's extremely salty. Yeah. Salt comes out. It's saturated. Yet, there are two types of bacteria there. And I knew this from previous studies. I tried to understand how the enzymes of this bacteria. So I said, this is stress. For me, it's better stress than the winter because first, it's all the time. Second, I don't have to be in the minus 80 room. But this is why I started to work. Actually, the first one was semi-thermophiles, but I switched into the Dead Sea. It's called Halo arcula. Halo, because halophiles, the salts. Arcula is the type of bacteria. Halo arcula Maris Mortin. Maris Mortin in Latin is Dead Sea. And then I also used ribosomes from bacteria that lived in hot springs.
Okay.
And bacteria, so it's Thermus thermophilus, and bacteria that lives in the sewage of atomic piles. So then it's also resistant to radiation. It's called the Anococcus radiodurans. This is the way I started. And everybody laughed at me. They wrote papers against me. She went to the very extreme. She will find something extreme. It will not explain. All types of things like this. So this is the way I started.
Yeah.
And I was the joke of the world.
I think research has a lot to thank you for believing in yourself and doing your research.
I'm not sure I believe. I think I'm sorry to be not to be as fantastic as you think. I thought it also I can fail any minute.
Yeah.
But I had this fantastic situation that I cannot be promoted anyway, and I cannot be on the faculty.
Yeah.
I could do what I wanted. My salary was a little bit lower, but that's it. Mm-hmm. Everything else, I could do what I wanted. So I had a student afterwards, another student, but this was my only commitment. I didn't sit in any committee. I didn't have to read any reviews. I could work.
Yeah.
Best time in my life. But then when I got the first indications that I can get order, still not crystals, but order, and we published it, then I became not very popular, mm-hmm. I must say. She is dreaming, she doesn't know, she doesn't understand, she's doing it in a way that nobody else, all types of things. However, in the Weizmann Institute where I work, there is a committee that interviews scientists, and every scientist it comes to about every between 3 to 5 years. That we have to tell the committee, it's all secret. We have to tell the committee about our progress. We have to write something about it. And then they go to the president and say, she's nothing, she's fantastic, things like this. And this is all secret. So in this committee, luckily, was Kendrew. He determined the structure of myoglobin, hemoglobin, together with Perut, originally from Oxford.
Yeah.
No, he was at Cambridge at that time. Afterwards, he was the director of EMBL. You know what is EMBL? European Molecular Biology Lab.
Okay,
you don't have to know everything. But anyway, at that time, he finished being president of this or of that, and he was one of my judges. Yeah. And he was open. He asked me so many questions, and many I didn't know to answer and so on. But he said, this is a project that shouldn't be stopped, although the progress is low, and although she's not talking the way everybody understands. Shouldn't be stopped. What's the big deal? You have her anyway. Mm-hmm. One scientist, and I had a grant, because then I published my first results, which was 12 diffraction spots out of 2.5 million. Yeah. I had the guts to approach the NIH, National Institute of Health, for a grant. Mm-hmm. Usually they give grants only to, first of all, Americans. Second, those that are not in America, but are working on something that is not worked in America, on projects that are not in America. But I had the guts to do it. So they opened a new path, mm-hmm. in their research line, and called it the risky path. The risky path, and I was the risk. So they supported me, not very highly, but enough. Mm-hmm. But at that time, in parallel, Max Planck in Berlin, with its director, Wittmann, that only wanted ribosomes. Mm-hmm. Nothing was everything about their function, about their composition, about their evolution. His wife was doing all the sequences, only ribosomes. Mm-hmm. Here I came, and I have already a paper. I used their materials, and they even gave me a place to sit. I was a guest.
Yeah.
I sat in the hood, place that you put something in, and there is vacuum. So this is called hood, and this was my seat. So it didn't matter. They gave me, first of all, a visitor position, and then they created for me a small institute in this, you know what is synchrotron accelerator?
Yeah.
Where we do our measurements. This is the way to produce X-rays.
Ah.
At that time, there was one in Hamburg, the first one, and it started only. And I knew that if I want to measure something, I have to go there. And the Max Planck arranged for me a research group in Hamburg, and I became a Max Planck contractor for 24 years. In parallel to Israel. So once I had this 12 out of 2.5 million.
Yeah.
So this is the way it started. So he was very, very supportive, Wittmann, and he convinced the Max Planck that for them I was only a little zero, but if I get it, it will be a big thing.
Yeah.
And Kendrew did it, but the progress was very, very slow, very slow. And I had to change crystallography on it.
When in time are we talking now?
1979, December 12th. So December 15th.
All right.
So if you want, 2 weeks more.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this was anyway, they all went for their Christmas. So.
Yeah.
You know, the Germans, they don't miss it. I think also in Sweden, you celebrate Christmas and New Year.
Yeah, I do.
But I was there and sat in the library and read about the bears and tried to make ribosomes. So nobody forced me to take my case. And I only arrived there after my brain concussion. Anyway, in 1984, I had the first real published paper. I had 2 or 3 before explaining what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So the whole world could find points to laugh at me. And in 86, we made the revolution in crystallography that I can tell you that even the Nobel Committee wrote about it in my prize, revolution in introducing cryocrystallography, cryobiocrystallography. And also I discovered the tunnel in the ribosomes through which the protein comes out. Yeah. At that time, they thought that protein comes on the shoulder. Mm. But I didn't see the shoulder of the ribosome. So now where it is, I found the internal tunnel through which the protein goes. And then it took about 6-7 more years until I got a diffraction pattern that gave a hope. Mm. Yet it was far from structure. Mm-hmm. Took another 8-9 years, yeah. But I became more and more subject for laughing, for disbelief, and people tell me that the comments about me were really very aggressive and very hurting, and they think that people were so nasty just because I was a woman. Yeah. I'm not sure, but what I tell you, I couldn't care less. I didn't even listen to the critique unless it was scientific critique. If it was personal or educational, this, I couldn't care less. I didn't have time. I had also my daughter. Mm. I had two groups to run, one in Hamburg, one in Israel. I had the most difficult project in the world. You think I had time to listen to what Michael said or what Henry said or whatever. Then when I already had convincing results, but still not able to use them. And when I proved the first step in feasibility, the judge that I had two judges. I had judge in the Weizmann and judge in Hamburg. So the judge in Hamburg that I had was Swedish, Karl Brandel. He became my judge. I told you what the judges say is secret.
Yeah.
So I explained what I was doing. Huh? And then they were sitting, the judges and the president. And he said, this project is Nobel Prize caliber. Not clear that Ada will make it, but it is high caliber. So this is secret. Mm-hmm. Within half an hour, the whole institute knew it. Another half an hour, the whole country knew it. Even in Tel Aviv, everywhere I went. And he didn't even say that it's a Nobel Prize. He says it's caliber. It's not clear that I will make it. But this they didn't care. They only wear the name Nobel. And for me, it was very, very embarrassing. I wasn't happy about it. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell him, be quiet. I cannot control his mouth. And I didn't complain to him. We were really a very, very good friends, he and me, scientifically. Mm-hmm. But the rumor was spread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was not sure that I will get there. And I also wasn't sure I'll get a Nobel Prize. No, there are many people that have 30 or 50 years get the Nobel Prize. When I got the physics, people were 35 years after their discovery. So I decided I don't think about it, as I didn't think about the way people treated me earlier. Mm. I just continued working. Mm-hmm. And when we got the structure, we already had two competitors that were not even shy to say that they copied our procedures. But when I got the Nobel, I was happy. But when I got the structure and understood the function immediately, within weeks, mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it's the biggest assembly in the world.
Yeah.
It has, even in bacteria, 80 components. And it interacts with many, many, many cell components. And it became really clear immediately how it works. So then I was in heaven. This was overwhelming for me. Yeah. Much, much more than any of the prizes I got afterwards. And I got a lot. Yeah. I got so many. I really got a lot.
It must have been a great feeling.
Understanding the function.
Yes, and the structure. And
this was the biggest. So the structure was really important. And I love structures, but it's an instrument in order to understand the process. Mm-hmm. And then, ribosomes are the target of half of the antibiotics that are used today. Mm-hmm. And antibiotics are tiny, tiny. Yeah. So I didn't think that we will ever be able to see how they work. No, we do. All of them. We see how they work. We see how resistance to them. We see how we can suggest something completely different for antibiotics. It became practical.
Yeah.
We started to understand it became practical. And we also saw inside the ribosome something like a pocket where the peptide bond is being made. Mm-hmm. And this is the same in all ribosomes from bacteria, from cockroaches, from flowers, from elephants, from humans. Always, this part is always the same. So we think that it's resistant to evolution. Yeah. It's not changed, and therefore we suggested that this is the origin of life. This place is where life started. And only recently, more than 10 years after we suggested it, maybe 12, 13, we were able to show that it, even when we produced it in the lab, we said that this can stay at its own, and we could show that it makes peptide bonds.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
This is really origin of life. And all this I was not expecting. I only wanted to understand translation. Now I understand translation. And I have an idea of origin of life. I understand half of antibiotics, all the antibiotics that work on ribosomes. And fridge benefits. Recently, we are working on diseases. I want to tell you, I'm not sure you want to hear, but diseases that are caused by, small mutations in ribosomal proteins. Mm-hmm. So now there are over 87, 89 ribosomal proteins in humans. And one mutation in one protein is associated with the severe diseases like anemia, leukemia. I think there is one more, but I'm working on the anemia and leukemia. I think that if we understand the molecular basis for this, the diseases that are localized in one place, they both work on the red blood cells, maybe we can come up with an idea how to repair this problem. Even if we cannot, maybe somebody else comes.
Yeah, something for the future to discover.
Yeah. I'm just writing a grant proposal now for this. If you think I get money, you're wrong. NIH gave me Max Planck. I finished in 2004. But NIH, they gave me money. You know, NIH, National Institute of Health in America, they gave me money for 22 years, three years at the time. But only at one point, we had to skip a year because there were floods in Louisiana and some of the bridges fell down and they had to repair them. And they called it a federal problem, not local, just federal. When there is a federal problem, there is no money given to anybody out of the United States. So my project did not get money for a whole year. And I feel that I repaired part of these bridges. I let them repair. But anyway, they gave money for 22 years. The day that I got the telephone call about the Nobel Prize, I was writing application for continuation. And I sent it. And in a few weeks, I got a letter from them. To support me because I have no creativity, no imagination, no high levels. They cut it all with zip. The minute I got about the, and they got it the same day, it became published, the Nobel announces it. So if you think that Nobel Prize winners get many grants, you're wrong. Everybody says, probably she gets from somebody else. Let's give it to a young person. I agree to give it to a young person, but not because I am not creative.
Yeah, because I wanted to ask you, how has both your personal life and your career changed after you won the Nobel Prize?
You see, as I told you, the real change in me was when I understood the structure.
Yeah, exactly.
But the Nobel Prize is a blessing and it's a punishment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a blessing because you want to listen to me and you're young people and I enjoy it. Not only you, it means people like you.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. You may or may not get out of me anything, but at least I can tell you it's up to you.
We get a lot of inspiration,
yeah,
we can say.
And I meet children in Israel from the age of 12, about 1,500 a year. And in the world before the corona, about the same number all over in many places. So it let me this interaction. Before this, I couldn't get this interaction unless I was a teacher. Also. And also, normal people sometimes are interested.
Yeah.
So from interaction with the world and with sometimes influencing the younger people, this is a blessing. But you know how many garbage I get? Mm. How many think that since I have a Nobel Prize, I can do everything? Mm. Everything means sometimes very ugly things. And one thing that I like less is the media. So when the media ask me, how did your life change with the prize? I tell them, before this, you didn't want to talk to me. Only now you want to talk to me. It means I blame them. It's not very nice of me. I learn now to sneak out, but they're really pushy. And they're pushy for their for their answer. If I answer something else, they change. Mm. They have no inhibition. Yeah, she supported this, she supported this. And then I'm supporting all types of things that I don't know even what they are. Mm. For me, it's important. There are people that don't care, but for me, it's important. What also happened is when I say something, in the beginning, I was less careful. And I said something that I really feel, and they are not very conventional. My granddaughter got on her head. Your grandmother is so crazy and so on. So now I'm quiet. My granddaughter is more important for me than any reporter. Mm. But sometimes I have to. And some reporters are nice and not like listening. I don't want to say nice or ugly, but listening.
Yeah.
The interaction is positive.
We can talk about more on the Nobel Prize. I think, consider that it's only 5 women that had won the Nobel Prize in chemistry. How do you feel about being one of them and someone that...
First of all, pick up the phone and ask the Nobel Committee. Ask them why they are so few female. Well, I gave you an ugly answer.
Yeah.
I think that in principle, female in science didn't take, not many female in science took leads of projects or groups. And this is because the society does not, because of many things, but mainly in my opinion, the society does not encourage female in science. Oh, you see, look at the balcony there. You see how ugly she is? But she's a scientist. So, do you remember we passed near the door downstairs and the baby was crying because his mother is a scientist. Mm. So this is the way many people think about female in science.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this should be changed, and I'm trying. I'm really trying to change it, but how can I change the whole world? It's worldwide. So female are really good scientists. In my group, there are always 70-75% female. The person that runs the group is a female, means not the one under me. The best students I had are female. Mm-hmm. Well, there is also one good man. I don't want to say the best, but about the top 10%, I had more than 100 students and postdocs by now. Within the 10%, 77 out of the 10% are female. Mm-hmm. They're very good, but few of them want afterwards to become group leaders. They want to work in groups to do good science, but not to have the duties, the responsibilities, because of what the society thinks and because what they think. They want to have their 3 children and the 1 husband and so on, and the cat and so on. And they think they cannot do it together, which is correct for some, but maybe less correct for others. There are very good female scientists, but few of them are leading something.
Yeah.
And this is changing.
Yeah.
This is, you see, there is 46 years between the one before me and me in chemistry, but only 11 years, 10 years between me and the next one, is Arnold.
Yeah, yeah.
The last one was Dorothy Hodgkin. Mm-hmm. You know Dorothy Hodgkin? You know about her?
Yeah, it was in 1964.
I'll tell you in a minute how I know it, but she had, when she started, she had 2 students in the first year that she had students. The first 2, a man and a woman. She kicked out the one because she wasn't good enough. You heard about this woman. Her name is Margaret Thatcher, the Prime Minister of Britain.
Yeah.
She was kicked out because she wasn't good enough in science. But I think, in my opinion, science is demanding, but politics is more demanding.
Mm-hmm.
And more dirty. Art is demanding, performance is demanding, dancing is demanding. All these are demanding, but they have somehow, society is not very supportive of this, but more supportive, maybe because they more understand.
Yeah.
I worked 20 years and I get the Nobel Prize and then I say ribosome. What is ribosome? Ribosome. A dancer studies 10, 15 years to dance, and then she does the lake, the Swan Lake. Oh, everybody understands that.
Yeah.
Or music. So it's easier for the society to think that female, if they want to put all of themselves, and I didn't put all, but most of themselves in art, it may be not very good, but tolerable. So the society should be re-educated.
Do you have any advice?
So I have one advice, only one. This is, don't look for advices.
Why is that?
Do what you feel, the way you want, the way you think is right.
Mm-hmm.
Advice, what shall I say? Be fired like me. Well, I don't even have a good example, but I think that pushing from the beginning towards recognition it's also not good. Maybe better to be fired than be at least mentally free. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I cannot say. I say, don't look for advices. Do what is burning in you, what you think you can do.
Yeah.
And this is correct for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people ask me how there is balance between my family and my work. So I hate the word balance, because balance means that I count. I was 5 hours here, I should be 5 hours mm-hmm. here. And this is not my way.
Mm-hmm.
So my way is to love my family and to love my work.
Mm.
Then once you love something, once you are in something, it works. Maybe not for everybody, but it works for me.
Yeah.
Beautiful words.
Oh yeah, I have one question as well. So if you were a student today, would you have done anything differently, or do you think that you would have still followed your own?
I will be less happy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the word happy is not correct, but I will be more tense.
Yeah.
When I was a student, as I told you, for 2 years I didn't even know that there is a profession like this. I learned for fun, for my own. And also afterwards, 10 or 15 years ago, I started to think about it. You need papers, you need to show yourself, you need to be involved. All this was not part of my entity.
Mm-hmm.
So I have papers. I have really, as a student, I had 6 papers, one in Nature and one in GMB. So I had good papers, but not because I thought I needed.
Mm-hmm.
It so happened that the work was sufficiently good to be published this way. But if I was today a student, I see my students. And I have really very good ones. And from many countries,
mm-hmm.
right now in my lab, there are 2 Italians, one comes in 2 weeks, 2 Indians,
mm-hmm.
Polish left.
Yeah.
Means until last week I had also a Polish and 3 Israelis.
Mm-hmm.
So I have everything. Yeah. Not everything, but many, many countries.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them are recognition and paper oriented.
Yeah.
Things that did not pay any importance to me.
Mm-hmm.
Scientist that runs the lab, her name is Anat Bashan. If you look at our papers, she's on every paper she runs, she can't care less. She's on every paper and everything because I think she contributed.
Mm.
She can't care less. She wants to do good work and she wants the students to be good. This is what's important for her.
Mm.
And she's been with me for 30 some years since she was a student. She was my PhD student. She's a first class scientist and she can't care less for a recognition, let's call it like this. She's recognized enough.
One finishing question. Do you have anything you'd like to say to university students like us or something? Anything you can think of just to finish this interview off?
So to young students,
yes.
What I can say is no matter how the society and your environment is pushing you, stay with yourself. Go after what is interesting for you, what you really want to understand. And even if it doesn't work, or you have to suffer this way or there, or that way, or change your place, what's important is that you go after what you want to understand. Of course, if it's important, if it's not a stupid question, and if it's stupid or not stupid question, you should be clever enough to understand. Don't look for easy questions. Don't look for fast questions. Look for what is interesting for you, because you, at least me, my feeling at work was much more important than any recognition. Love your work.
Then we'd like to thank you so much for being our guest here. It's been a pleasure and an honor for us to have you here.
Thank you.
And we admire your work.
Pleasure for me.
Despite experiencing many setbacks, Yonath took on the challenge creating her own path using her main tool of motivation, curiosity. She didn't let the personal criticism take her down, and instead she stayed determined on finding the answers to her curious questions. Today, the importance of Yonath's research has been worldwide acknowledged and has been, and still is, an essential step closer to understanding the origin of life.